All right, thank you. How y'all doing?
Okay.
All right. Anybody else live in the South at any point in time? Okay. So that's where I learned how to say y'all in Atlanta. And if you're really Southern, say all y'all. So, hey, I'm glad to be here today. Let me just say up front, I sound worse than I feel, so I appreciate your empathy and compassion, but I'm okay. Although I will probably cough some, and I apologize for that. I'm fighting some coughing stuff. But we'll get through it. Let me just tell you what the theme of today is so that you can sort of think about it and look for it as I go through what I'm going to share. And the theme really is that God cares for us and he leads us even when we don't know it. And my life is a testimony to that. I am a psychologist. Yeah, you may remember that, you know, psychiatrists are physicians who give medication largely to help people. Psychologists are people who go to school for a really long time to be able to charge you a lot of money to give you the same advice that your mom and your grandma gave you. And if you would listen then, you wouldn't have to see me now. So I understand that. I think it's always fair for people to know a little bit about me, and I'm going to share more than usual today. I did grow up in Kansas. And yes, I do know Dorothy and Toto and all that kind of thing. And I have a sunflower here just to commemorate that. I grew up in Lawrence outside of Kansas City, and I grew up in the context of a family-owned business. It was a manufacturing firm that my father and grandfather and eventually my mom and uncle and brothers and everybody worked at. And so that's going to be an important piece that we'll come back to. I had the blessing of growing up in a Christian home, and decided early on in my life that being a follower of Christ was an individual decision. It wasn't just something that happened by being born into a family that was from a Christian culture or whatever. And so I decided to do that as a child, and then when I was a teenager, I decided that I really needed to give my life more fully. So I did at that point in time. And then wound up coming to college here. I actually wanted to go to Moody. I just thought about this. I wanted to go to Moody because a number of my friends were going there. But my father, who was a businessman, asked me, it was sort of between Moody and Wheaton. And he said, I'd prefer you go to a school that you could study accounting, because you're going to need accounting. Even if you're in ministry, you need to understand finances and all that. So I wound up going to Wheaton and met my wife there. The first week, freshman orientation, we didn't start dating right away, but met her there, and then majored in Christian education, which really was about how to have healthy relationships with people and with God, and that's sort of been a theme for me, and wound up wanting to go overseas to China to help plant house churches there, and moved out to Phoenix to get trained in leading house churches. This is in the late 70s, early 80s. And while I was there, at that point in time, a lot of people sort of moved to Phoenix to start their lives over. So there were a lot of hurting people, and especially in more relationally oriented churches. And so saw that, and saw that a lot of people's needs from early on in life, maybe damage from, you know, not healthy family really could be avoided. And so I wound up getting my master's in counseling at Arizona State. Had no desire to be a psychologist or whatever. I took one psychology course at Wheaton because I had to. And I just thought it was stupid stuff. And some of it is. Got my master's in counseling. And as part of that process, I applied and was accepted as an intern to test students that had learning difficulties in residential treatment for behavior disorder kids and autistic children. And so I had that piece become a part, and I wound up going and working for the state, investigating child abuse for a while, moved to Atlanta to get my PhD because I felt like I needed the additional training to get where God wanted me to be. And while I was there, I continued to work on testing, but also had a research and assessment piece come in that I learned about how to design assessments and that kind of stuff. And that's been a huge piece in my career as we've moved on. And so we have twin sons. They're now 35. We had them in Phoenix. We had our middle son in Atlanta. We moved from Atlanta to Wichita, Kansas, the center of the state. I had a year of internship training, and I wanted to not have to move after a year, so I was looking for a place where I could work. So I wound up moving there and working for a Christian private practice. We had our daughter there in Wichita, and we decided we didn't want any more children, so we haven't moved since, because it seemed like it was always together. So during this time, I became sort of a specialist in assessment of students with learning issues and gifted students and other kinds of things. And also, I continued to be involved at the board level and sort of advisory level of my family's business. And some friends of mine that were business consultants knew of my background, and I tend to be a little bit more business-oriented than most mental health professionals. And so they kept running into family issues as they were consulting with businesses, because 85% of all the companies in the U.S. are family-owned. And so if you deal with businesses, you're going to wind up dealing with families and family issues. So I wound up moving into the area of what's called family business coaching, where I would deal with the family relationship side of business decisions, whether that's people not getting along while they're working, or moved into business succession planning, both management succession and ownership succession. And that ties into investments and estate planning and all that kind of stuff. So I wound up being introduced to a group out of Indianapolis and got trained and started traveling all over the US, working with high net worth families. Met some very interesting people along the way. Michael Milken, he was out of jail when I met him, but Vice President Gore and so forth, and some very, I remember in a meeting, I was in a boardroom in Southern California with Michael Milken here and a number of other very wealthy people, and I'm like, they're there to listen to me to talk about how to pass wealth on without messing up your kids. And I just sat there and I thought, what am I doing? I'm just a boy from Kansas, you know? But I remembered that I know the God of the universe, and he's the source of wisdom. And so got through it. I didn't embarrass myself too much, I don't think, and kept doing that kind of work. And in the midst of that, I was working with a highway construction company in North Carolina. And we were doing the succession planning. I talked to the father and I said, you know, how are things going? And he said, it's going well. My son is stepping up. I think it's going to go well and we'll move forward. I walk across the hall and ask the son, I said, you know, how's the plan going? He says, this is a disaster. It's never going to work. I can't ever please my dad. And so I thought, oh, okay, interesting. At that time, my wife and I, Kathy and I, were reading The Five Love Languages by Dr. Chapman, and found it, I would say it probably saved my marriage. I mean, aside from my wife being committed to me, because I was just clueless. I'm a psychologist, but I was still clueless relationally in marriage and stuff. She sort of thought that last night too, but anyway, we'll keep it. I'm taking her on a date tomorrow to get back. So, because her language is time. I thought, you know, I wonder if this concept might work in workplace relationships. So, I wound up pursuing Dr. Chapman. He's from North Carolina, and wound up pursuing him for over a year. He had a very effective, what I would call a nice, gentle bulldog assistant that I could not get through. But he came to Wichita to do a marriage and family conference, and I got 45 minutes with him and pitched the idea. And I, to my lack of knowledge, he had already had 20 or more people approach him about this idea, but God appeared to be in the work of things. And I actually, he was not interested in writing a book at that point in time. He had plenty on the line. But I pitched the idea of doing an online assessment about this. And he said, well, I'm not a computer person, but you know, go for it. So I started working on the assessment and then started developing. We talked about what's the equivalent of love in the workplace, because it's sort of weird to talk about love and there's problems with it. Misconceptions, and so we came up with the belief that appreciation is really the core concept. And so wound up doing training materials and would, you know, meet with nonprofits and ministries and schools, the people I knew, and started that and sort of developed it. And then I was traveling a lot, and I would write while I was traveling, and so wrote the book and came out in 2011, and has done well. We're really pleased. We rewrote it in 2019, came out in January, and I know we're over 425,000 or something like that, and we've sold more every year since 2013. So it seems to be growing and used by more and more large corporations, John Deere, Caterpillar, Exxon, DirecTV, all those, as well as family-owned businesses and governments and churches and so forth. And the reason, I think, is because there's a need, right? That, and if you look at your table by the poinsettia, there's a series of cards. And on the cards, there's a side that says core concepts. And really, the foundation of our work is that people really would like to feel valued and appreciated at work. I mean, is that true for most of us, right? Yes, we need to motivate ourselves and get things going, but we would like to hear occasionally that somebody else values what we do besides just having to do that ourselves. And so the problem is that most people don't feel appreciated. We have research, in fact, in our chapter on the business case for appreciation, we have over 50 research citations on that document all of this. But, you know, 65% of employees say they haven't heard anything positive in the last year, which is sort of crazy, because about 90% of all companies have some form of employee recognition program. And need to emphasize that employee recognition and authentic appreciation aren't the same. Recognition is largely organizational, it's top down. It's either about how long you've worked there or about performance. And research has shown that about 10 to 15% of your top employees tend to be recognized for performance, and volunteers as well in ministry. And it tends to be the same 10 or 15% year after year. So you have a big middle group of 50 or 60% of people who are doing a good job, they're solid, they're trying, but they don't hear anything. And one research study that's very important shows that 79% of the people who leave a job cite a lack of appreciation as the primary reason they're leaving. Most business leaders and managers think people leave for more money. That's actually not the case. 89% of managers think that's what's going on. Only 12% of employees report that they're leaving for more money, because leaving a job is a very emotionally taxing process. You have to disengage, you have to look, you have to re-engage, and it takes an emotional driver to make that happen. And so they may get more money, but that's not their initial reason that they're going. So sort of got into that. Let me go ahead and with the core concepts that, you know, not everybody feels appreciated in the same ways. And that's where the five languages come in. And they actually are the same in name as the five love languages, but look and are applied differently. Let me just name them for you. Words of affirmation, quality time, acts of service, tangible gifts, and yes, even physical touch. And we won't do a group hug because we're in Chicago and you guys don't do that here, but we do it in Southern California. Anyway, but physical touch is actually a part, and I'll circle back and talk about that. One of the key things that we've learned along the way, because we've trained, we developed some training materials, is important to me because I grew up in the not-for-profit and social service world where people give a lot, but they don't have, they don't earn much, they don't get much prestige, and they don't have money for training. So I wanted to create some low-cost training materials, so I developed what we call the Appreciation at Work Kit that has some videos, both by Dr. Chapman and myself, a facilitator's guide, handouts, and so forth. And we've had almost 900 people worldwide take it and use, it's an online train the trainer course, and use it with their organizations or as consultants. It's being used in at least 25 countries currently. And so we wanna help people know how to communicate appreciation to one another. And one of the issues is, and this is important for this group, is that appreciation, the responsibility is not just for managers and leaders and supervisors. We started out that way, but we quickly heard from people that they'd like to both know how to encourage and show support to their team, but also valued appreciation for the team members. And so we go in and we teach and train people how to show authentic appreciation in ways that are meaningful to each person. And so the assessment that I mentioned, we have a code in the back of the book, and the books are somewhere at the back. And if you want one, we're selling them for 10 bucks, and you can leave a business card if you don't have any money or whatever, and we'll just bill you. But the assessment identifies each person way that they prefer to be shown appreciation. Also, their least valued way, because that's your blind spot. That's the one you don't think about, right? It's the one that doesn't come to you naturally, so you don't really go there, but you have team members who have that language, and so you're at risk for missing them. The other difference, or another difference between the five love languages and the five language appreciation, is that we found that just knowing your language really wasn't sufficient in the workplace. I had a manager say, my team member has quality time. What does that mean? What am I supposed to do? So in our assessment, we created a section where you go in, and after it identifies your primary language, it then gives you a series of 25 actions within that language that you can choose from. So quality time, go to lunch and talk about work. Go to lunch and not talk about work. Watch the Bears lose. they won last night, right? Yeah, good for them. They didn't play anybody. What was it, the Sisters of the Blind and Deaf or something? Anyway.
Take
away. I'm a Chiefs fan, so we'll see in a few weeks. But and here's the deal, that in the old days, when I was growing up in my career, you know, the message was people don't leave a job, they leave a what? Manager, right? That's less true than it used to be. That it's now not the sole responsibility for a manager or supervisor to sort of encourage and help people feel valued. That we know that younger employees really do value peer and collegial relationships as much. And so I tell leaders, when we have a group profile that a team can take and find out each other's results and talk about it, and I say, just because one of your team members has quality time as their language does not mean they want time with you, okay? You may be good, you may be great, but often it's more that they'd like to hang out with their friends and colleagues that way. So I've had the privilege of doing that, and along the way, you know, I don't think I mentioned that there was a relationship in Wichita that was just a guy that I went to church with that God used to introduce me into the family business coaching thing, and it just sort of went from there. I mean, there was no, I didn't think about it ahead of time or whatever, and my life has been like that. As I look back over my life, I'm 62 now, and I see how God put in place different relationships or different events that there's no way I could have known, I couldn't have sought it out, and you know, and so for those of you that are younger, it's good to have goals and to have a direction, but God's in control, and he cares about us, and he knows what's best for us more than we do. I was at Thanksgiving. I was sharing what I was thankful about, and I'm really thankful for my job, because it's an amazing combination of who I am and how God trained me to be able to serve people. And that is a blessing. And thanks. So I tell young people, I say, if you're gonna pray, one thing you should pray for, because we know that enjoying your work is a blessing from God, right? That's in Ecclesiastes. Ask God to lead you and guide you to the place where you can enjoy your work, because that is huge. And it just affects all the rest of your life. And so I'm thankful because I get to speak. I write, I've done this assessment. It's now in, I don't know, 10 languages. It just came out in Thai and Mandarin and Portuguese. And I get to help people and support my family at the same time. And it's just cool. And I get to meet all kinds of people, and I get to learn about all different kinds of organizations and businesses. There's no way. I went to New Orleans, and I spoke to a conference on marine companies. Not like the Army Marine, but like sea people, right? So people that build boats, build ports. These are not like little things. These are like ships, you know, ports. Stevedores, which are the people that pilot the ships up the Mississippi. I didn't know anything about this, but I get to talk to them and learn about them and hear what the challenges are for them. And let me just say this, that I don't laugh anymore. I used to laugh because when I would consult with family businesses, they say, well, you know, our business is unique. There's nobody else like us out there. Well, everybody says that. And to one degree, it's true. On the other hand, the themes are the same, right? The themes are how to get your product or service to the right people, in front of the right people. How do you do it well, serve and make something well? How do you work together as a team? How do you make wise decisions when there are things external to you, whether that's economy or government regulations happening that affect your business? How do you deal with that? And I just would encourage you that God cares for you. And if you're in a difficult situation, you don't know where you're going, one of the verbs that it's used for us a lot is walking. I have a habit, I think I've gotten past it, actually. John, here's a friend from Moody, and I'd like to run ahead of God. Anybody else do that? I got an idea, or I feel, and I'm like, woo, let's go, baby, come on, you know? And I'm out there in the wilderness by myself, waiting for the weather to change or whatever, and because I was always going ahead. I think that I was pretty good at direction, but my timing was always off, right? And so sometimes we need to learn to just walk and listen and do what we're supposed to day by day, and God will guide and lead us in amazing ways. And I think that the privilege of working and being a follower of Christ is that we know the God who made the universe, huge thing out there. I mean, I can't even fathom it. And also when you go down to microbiology and neurons and all that, how the details, he made all that, and yet he chooses to let us get to know him and lead and guide us, not always in the clearest way. I mean, lots of time. I mean, I remember spending nights worrying and praying and, you know, am I supposed to do this, do that? And my answer was just wait. And it's a good thing I did, because what I maybe was going to do, the guy went bankrupt within 6 months, you know, and I was going to move my family across the country. And so sometimes you just got to chill and slow down, and God, typically God's going to get you where you need to go, you know, if you're at least partially listening, right? If you're full bore against, you know, don't go on a ship, you know, you get thrown over to get eaten by a fish. But he's in control. He's big enough that he can help us get where we need to go. So let me just say that one of the things that it's important to me, and it's interesting to me that, you know, the five love languages has been very well received within the Christian subculture. And we thought the five languages appreciation would be as well by churches, ministries, missions, people that are Christians in the workplace. I would say probably that's been the bigger place, but it's the secular marketplace that is eating us up and loves us, because people don't feel valued. They don't know why they feel here. There are humanists out there that they say, you know, people are important. They don't have any clue of how they got there. But, you know, we sort of affirm that. And when we give people practical ways to show appreciation in the way that's meaningful to the other person, it hits the mark. One of our themes is we're about authentic appreciation. We're not about making you look like you appreciate somebody, going through the motions, whatever. So let me give you some practical examples of each of the languages, and then maybe I'll be quiet and let you ask some questions if you'd like. So words of affirmation. We've had over 200,000 people take our assessment. 46% of employees have words of affirmation as their primary language. Big group, but it's still less than half. So words doesn't meet it for half. Words are basically you're affirming their value. And one of the things is that it's not just about performance. Has anybody here ever gone through a series in a life where you really weren't best at work that you could have been because there were other circumstances going on? I mean, like, you know, family issues or health or whatever. Do you cease to have value as an employee at that point? No. Okay, so we really help teams learn how to show value and affirm it to one another. And here's a simple formula. Use a person's name. We like to hear our name. And if you're writing it, please spell it correctly. Tell them specifically what you value about what they've done or who they are. So it could be Stephen. You got to figure out it's a PH or a V, and you know, and say, Stephen, you know, thanks for picking me up at the airport late last night and getting me, you know, to where I could get home and so forth. And then the third piece is why it's important. And so it's name, specifics. Good job does not cut it. Okay, you got to be specific in why it's important, either to you or to your organization or your clientele. Stephen, thanks for picking me up late at the airport, taking me where I can get a ride. That way it saved my wife, you know, a half hour or more of driving. And, you know, that's just really valuable to me. So, first one's what? What do you use there? And then you are. And then you tell. Okay? Quality time is largely focused attention for most people, that they want to know that you're with them, listening to them, and so forth. For a lot of guys, it's more collegial kinds of things, doing things together, watching sports together, going and doing a task together. 26% of the workforce has tangible, quality time as their language, so about one out of every four. Acts of service, these are your get or done kind of people. A CEO said my language is get or done. He says, don't give me stuff, don't tell me. And for acts of service people, talking to them without helping is really offensive to them. So, and it's not like you do the work for them, but the best example of this is when people are working on a time-limited project and they have to get something done. What's something you or somebody else could do to help out and make that happen, whether that's answer the phone and sort of run interference or do some minor tasks for them? So, and that's 22%, so almost one out of every five people. Tangible gifts are not compensation, bonuses, and so forth. They're just small things that show you're getting to know one another. Could be their favorite cup of coffee, could be, you know, a Bear scarf, or you know, a magazine at the beginning of the season around the NBA if they're, you know, follow that. So it's largely about, actually the number one gift in the workplace that's given is food. Okay, and by the way, we're at holiday time, and let me save you that are business leaders some money. I'm working with a guy named John Rulin, who's sort of a leader in the world of business gifts, and we know that business gifts at Christmas time have virtually no impact on the relationship between the businesses and coming back to you. Why? Because it's between two companies. Companies don't have relationships. Okay, people have relationships. So it's more about you and maybe a person at that company that serves you well or whatever. And also, the best time to give a gift in business is when it's not expected. Okay, so Christmas, birthdays, anniversaries, you can do it, but it doesn't have much impact. Give it sometime, and again, tie it to a note that tells what about you, them you value. And then physical touch is largely spontaneous celebration, right? So high five, there's one last night, you know, fist bump, finish a project, congratulatory handshake, and actually given that we've used this in multiple cultures, a pat on the back is cross-culturally the most accepted form. Still some cultures that are not. You know, in the South, what do they do in the South physically, you know? Hugs, side hugs. Anybody live in New York or New Jersey in the past? Okay, this is what physical touch is in New York. Hey. Okay. And maybe downtown Chicago too, I don't know. So it's always the recipient's ability to set boundary. So those are some practical issues. The key is to find out what each person values. And we have a fun 10 to 15 minute assessment. You can get a group profile for your team, go through it. And it doesn't take a lot of time and energy. I had one CFO tell me, she said, my language is time. And she said, I just value if somebody stops by and checks in and see how I'm doing. But after 5 minutes, I'm booting them because I got too much to do. So it's not like, you know, you're going to be their best friend forever. Okay? So I hope you'll Check it out. And by the way, there's some sign-up sheets on your table, sort of in the center. It looks like this. If you would like, I will send you a free code to take the inventory, if you would like, as well as an article that calls, it's been published in a variety of places, it's Appreciation Makes Business Sense. And if you have a specific industry that you're in, whether that's not-for-profit or medical or whatever, we've done a lot of work with numerous industries and have articles in that, so you can mention that industry if you want, finance or whatever. So let me just stop there. I know we're close to out of time, but any questions anybody has? Yes, sir.
I was just curious when you mentioned all these different languages, but you know, just thinking of the different, like Asian versus Scandinavian and stuff like that, but these five are all transferable to the different cultures you found that.
So far we have. Now there are different, the actions look different. So that in China, for example, we found out that they don't go out to lunch together, but they bring breakfast in. And so that sometimes that's a way that they would share a meal and spend time. Or recently we did research in Singapore that we found out that the primary language in Singapore is acts of service, that's higher there than words, because they really value any assistance from their supervisor or whatever. So yeah, it's a fun exploration for us. But you know, there are two other languages that have been suggested as the sixth. One is sarcasm, and we're not going to do that. And the other is chocolate, which is a close one in there. Yeah, there we go. So.
Yeah, I've got chocolate.
All right, cool. Good. All right, thank you. Bob, anything else? All right, thanks.